Suarez et al. Versus Smith et al. Ms. Board.
May it please the Court, Counsel. I'm April Board. I'm here on behalf of William and Barbara Suarez. They were the plaintiffs in the underlying appeal. The case is based simply on the Fourth Amendment. At least the majority of the thrust of my arguments are based upon the Fourth Amendment, which I believe we hold near and dear, and that is being free from excessive force, being free from unreasonable search and seizure into your home without the sufficient probable cause. In this case, and I'm again not going to go over all of my briefs and the factual arguments that I know that the Court is already familiar with, but what I would like to go directly to is the fact that I believe that the defense's arguments with respect to that they brought forth with respect to probable cause for the search warrant and the arrest are three cases, essentially Reeves. Wedmore, Reeves v. State, Rush v. State. I believe, quite frankly, that those cases actually helped me because the particular facts of this case are so far akin from what the facts of my case are that I believe that the defense's cases actually helped me. And in this way, in our particular case, we have basically a gentleman graduating from high school. His mom's home. She's cooking. He has a few friends over. The house is a split level, and behind it is a period of the yard, then wall, 6-foot wall, another space, another 6-foot wall, and beyond that, the beach. As the evening progressed, essentially, apparently, one child or a semi-adult just graduating from high school brought a keg of beer down and placed it between the breaker walls. Apparently another young adult brought a couple of coolers down and put it between the breaker of the walls, all unbeknownst to of course, Mrs. Suarez. The evening starts that the Marshall Trowbridge, who had been there for a number of years and was starting to get up in age, had stopped, and apparently one of the gentlemen that had parked in front of the house didn't have an appropriate parking sticker. He goes to ticketing. The young man comes forward from the Suarez party. He indicates that he has the correct sticker. He puts it on the car. And according to Mr. Marshall Trowbridge, at least at that point, you know, he decides to give him a break on the parking ticket, and he pulls down the street. What's important here is that on this particular evening, this is a beach, and there are several parties, bonfire parties, going on along this beach, not just at the Suarez residence. So Mr. Marshall Trowbridge pulls down the street, and at that point, on further down the street, come a group of unruly kids out, taunting him, jumping on his car. At least that's the version that we hear from Marshall Trowbridge. Again, no evidence that's related to the Suarez party. And again, Marshall Trowbridge then proceeds to call for backup. He goes back to the main police department of Ogden Dunes. He calls in several police departments. And about 8 to 10 police cars proceed back for this unruly, out-of-control party. And this is, again, the time he stops about the parking ticket, about 11 o'clock. Undisputed testimony, at least from the defense, is that the time he applies for the telephonic search warrant is 12:39 in the morning. So about an hour and 40 minutes has transpired. They come forward with no nexus between the kids that had jumped on the car and the underage drinking party that they contend was going on inside the house at the time they applied for the search warrant. And I only say that as a preface that I'm sure the Court's already aware, to point out that with respect to the cases that the defense have come forward, for instance, Wedmore, that actually involved two adult men going and picking up two young girls, ages 14 and 15, on the representation that the girls were going to babysit, and then taking them to Michigan to buy cases of beer, bringing them back for a dancing and drinking party at their house. And on appeal, the conviction, of course, was affirmed because they said that there was a combined purposeful act of taking the girls to Michigan, and there were multiple acts that supported this contributing to the delinquency of a minor. In the Reeves case, we have the defendant was working digging a ditch with a minor, calls his older brother, brings beer, leaves at the end of the street. The defendant calls the minor's parents, says, you know, we're going to go to a show, complete lie, goes on, has the minor take the beer into the garage, and they proceed to drink all night, 15, 16 beers. and in the presence of the defendant. Third case, Rush, is where the neighbors are complaining of a loud party. They're saying, you know, there's a drinking party going on. It's loud, loud music, problems. Please come. They stop one boy who they have to chase. He says, yeah, there's a minor drinking party going on in that house. Now, then they see kids climbing in and out of the windows. They go to the door. Mom lets them in. Beer cans, liquor, everywhere. 13, 14 minor kids drinking and found to be drinking. Those facts are so far akin to the facts of the case I have and the case that we're asking you to overturn the district court's summary judgment.
But here's, to me, you have two big problems. One, you have a judge issuing the order, and so we have to give great deference to that finding by the court, the probable cause finding. And officers smelled alcohol on Bardson. They found beer cups. They looked in the window, and there were minors there. I mean, I realize it's not as egregious a situation as those cases you outlined, but the standard is probable cause.
Absolutely, Your Honor.
Which
and
is pretty light.
Absolutely, Your Honor. But that's where the material issues of fact actually preclude summary judgment. The smelling of the alcohol on Bardison's breath, according to Marshall Trowbridge, didn't initially claim that was true. Matter of fact, if he actually smelled alcohol on Bardison's breath, isn't that the time that he would have arrested him for underage drinking? Instead, he doesn't say that. He says, I wrote him a ticket and decided to give him a break. This all comes up later, and most notably in the audio tape that's submitted into evidence by the defense itself. A portion of the segment actually details Marshall Trowbridge calling in to check on Bardison, and his officer hadn't even thought that the guy maybe was drinking or administered a portable breath test to him at that point. With respect to, respectfully, Your Honor, to the evidence or the cups or the alcohol in the yard, according to the majority of the officers, they weren't there. Only, and in fact, none of the officers claimed that there were beer bottles or kegs or anything like that that they saw in the yard or anything in that they couldn't see it inside the house. The other problem we have is another material issue of fact with respect to whether this one officer saw kids hiding in that house. We have one officer saying that. In fact, the undisputed testimony in the record from the plaintiff's perspective is that when Barbara discovered that these kids had brought a keg in the house and these empty beer coolers, she took them all upstairs to her sewing room, took their keys away, and had them all up there in the upstairs where you couldn't, it's second story, you couldn't even shine lights in.
Don't the officers get the benefit of the collective knowledge of each of them who's on the scene in seeking this warrant?
And I, again, Your Honor, I did address that in my brief with respect to the collective knowledge doctrine.
Again, what fact have you produced that shows there's an intentional or reckless misrepresentation in the testimony submitted for the warrant? Isn't that what you need to do to get over that warrant?
Absolutely, Your Honor.
What do you have?
I believe that's clear in what Marshall Trowbridge told Judge Gent that night when he told her, again, the kids, there's an unruly party. These kids are out of control. They're jumping on my car. They've damaged the police car. Now we see bottles of alcohol in the yard. The officers have shined their lights into the back window. We see the kids hiding. These kids have retreated into this house. That's where the problem is, in my opinion, Your Honor, with respect to this.
Which one of those was knowingly, or were they all knowingly and intentionally submitted falsely?
I think that they were all knowingly, intentionally, and recklessly submitted, Your Honor. There is no doubt in my mind that Marshall Trowbridge, given his years of experience, could have made that many material, false, reckless misrepresentations to the judge in applying for that search warrant. He had to know, as a reasonable officer would, that if he didn't recite these necessary facts, that judge wasn't in the world going to issue a search warrant. In fact, the audio tape depicts that they had called the prosecutor's office first. The prosecutor said, no way, I'm not waking the judge up in the middle of the night for this. And so instead they just go around about. Officer Smith and Raddick have Judge Dent's home phone number. Let's just call her. And And if you'll excuse my language, judges, essentially what they say on the audio tape is, screw that, in more colorful language. There's no doubt.
The prosecutor might have been thinking, this is really not the crime of the century. Let's not bother the judge. Let's save the judge for something.
Well, I submit to the court that it is my belief that they probably, the first go-round, recited the facts more accurately and then realized they had to beef the facts up a little bit for the judge.
And does the record show that? That
no,
it
doesn't.
The facts given to the prosecutor were different than the facts given to the judge?
No, Your Honor.
But I would, you want to save a little time for rebuttal?
I was, and that's what I was about. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you, Ms. Boyd. Mr. Semler?
May it please the Court, my name is Ron Semler. I'm here on behalf of the Town of Ogden Dunes, Officers Trowbridge, Hughes, and McCorkle. As framed by the appellants on appeal, this case primarily turns on the issue of probable cause in support of the request for the search warrant and for the arrest of the appellants. As the court is aware, probable cause is based upon facts and circumstances known to the officer and of which he has reasonably trustworthy information. Appellants have based a goodly part of their brief and some of their argument based upon information which was not in the officer's possession. And consequently, in our point of view, it is basically beside the point. The court must look at what Officer Trowbridge had as far as information in his possession and determine whether such information would warrant a prudent person in believing that a search of the residence would uncover evidence of an offense, or in case of the arrest, if it would warrant an officer to believe that an offense had been committed. For purposes of the search warrant, Marshal Trowbridge had the following information which he communicated to the judge. He stopped by to issue a regular parking ticket, and there's this group of kids standing in the front of the house yelling at him while he's trying to talk to this gentleman about a parking ticket. He gives the guy a warning. You have to remember this is a one man who is elderly out there with a bunch of kids yelling at him. He goes to the end of the street, which is a short distance away, turns around, and some young men come up and jump on his car. Now, the proximity in time and in distance would indicate in a normal person's mind that these two occurrences are related. Consequently, he does have a group of young people that, in his mind at least, are out of control. They appear to be between the ages of 16 and 20. Upon his return with backup, he is advised that beer bottles are found, and that's in the report of Federal Ranger Chorba, that he found beer bottles down by the campfire. He himself smells red cups laying around, smells beer in them. Two other officers had the same experience, Smith and Chorba. And again, how many officers have to find these red cups smelling of beer before the officer has probable cause? And he is also told that there are young people in the house hiding behind attempting to hide behind the furniture therein.
And, Mr. Semler, I'm a little concerned about that. In his testimony to the judge for probable cause, he says all the kids retreated into the home. Did he have an observation of that, or did another officer observe that?
I think it's the circumstances that warranted him to draw that conclusion, Your Honor.
So he inferred that based on what was seen on the street by him, but then seen in the house by others.
We have a group of kids on the street, and then I go get back up, come back a half hour later, and I've got kids hiding inside the house. Okay? And again, as I said in my brief, you can draw the conclusion that either these are the same kids hiding inside the house, or the kids out front left, and another group of kids came back to hide in the house from police officers for no apparent reason. And I don't think that's a rational conclusion to draw. And also the idea that's questioned of the ranger shining the flashlight into the house. For some reason, the federal officers were not sued as defendants in this case. So, frankly, it really doesn't matter whether the ranger actually saw these kids or not. What is important is that he told Marshal Trowbridge that he saw these kids. and consequently, Marshal Trowbridge had no reason to disbelieve him. And therefore, this is information from a reliable source that he gave to the judge. And that judge found that based upon this information, there was probable cause to believe that there's underage drinking going on. As far as the arrest of the two individuals, I believe we fully set forth in our brief the probable cause that supports that arrest. And we would cite the court to Rush versus State, decided after this was briefed and before the opinion came down, that shows that a parent can be found guilty of contributing to the delinquent of a minor by providing a site for unlawful drinking. And I believe Mr. Kramer and Mr. Clark would also like to address the court.
Thank you, Mr. Semler. Mr. Kramer?
May it please the court. Tom Kramer, on behalf of Officers Smith and Raddick. First, I think it's important with respect to this appeal that the appeal of the probable cause issue is only directed against the Ogden Dunes defendants, the town of Ogden Dunes, Marshal Trowbridge, and the other two officers. Initially, in the summary judgment ruling, the summary judgment was granted as to the search and seizure issues as to all defendants. And the only issue that preceded a trial were William Swartz's excessive force claims against Officer Smith and Raddick of Portage and Officer Tomasco of Burns Harbor. Now, the sole issue raised on appeal with respect to the trial is the district court's refusal to admit into evidence certain portions of this audio tape, okay? And it is the defendant's position that the trial court properly excluded that evidence and that the decision of the trial court should therefore be affirmed. Now, the portion that was offered had nothing to do with the officer's apprehension and arrest of William. The pro-offered portions were entirely collateral to the excessive force claim, and they dealt solely with the warrant issue. Okay? And it was plaintiff's attempt to use what was described as this colorful language by Officer Raddick to somehow impeach his credibility, which has nothing to do with the excessive force claims. In addition, the other pro-offered rationale was that it showed the intent and motivation of the officers. And as this court is well aware, under Graham, motive, intent is totally irrelevant to the Fourth Amendment standard in determining whether or not there was excessive force. It's judged on the evidence. The portions of the videotape or audio tape which were admitted at trial started just prior to the officer's entry into the home and concluded after William's apprehension and arrest while he was at the while his eyes were being washed out at the sink, and it also concluded with William and his mother being placed in the squad car. The appellee in their brief has set forth, in my opinion, no evidence that could justify reversing the district court's decision.
Thank you, Mr. Graham.
Okay. Thank you.
Clark?
Thank you.
May it please the court. My name is Matthew Clark. I'm here on behalf of Ken Tomasco. As you can see, I've adopted a great portions of the other briefs, so I'll be brief. In terms of assignment of error, there's no assignment of error directed towards my client, Ken Tomasco. With respect to the trial of excessive force, the issue goes to the credibility of Officer Raddick and Smith. There's no analysis how that would apply to my client. In terms of the summary judgment grant, the sources point to no material issue of fact which would preclude judgment in Tomasco's favor. As such, I would respectfully request that this court affirm the district court's grant of summary judgment and the jury verdict's decision in favor of my client. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Clark. Ms. Ward.
Mr. Simler, you posed the question of, did Marshall Trowbridge see these kids retreat into the house? And I would like to direct the court's attention to the record at page 1075 and record at page 1340. In fact, Marshall Trowbridge later admitted that he never saw any kids retreat into the home. And this was the testimony of every single officer that was at the scene that night. Nobody ever saw these kids retreat into this home. It's undisputed there were multiple bonfire parties. It's undisputed that the events of Marshall Trowbridge, the kids jumping on his car, they retreated back down to the beach, didn't retreat into this home. Nobody saw these kids retreat into this home.
Ms. Ward, does the record reflect distances, for example, the Suarez home to the frontage where the citation was first issued, and does the record reflect the distance, perhaps, from that locale to the end of the street? Do we have a sense? I understand, I believe Mr. Semler said a short distance, but to these issues of where people retreated to and from, it might have been helpful if we had a sense of distance, at least for me.
You're absolutely right. As far as the specific of, does the record reflect it?
Yes.
Aside from the admitted photographs of the home in question and that type of thing, I don't believe that the record does reflect how far down the street this is. And as such, you know, I personally know, but I can't really make those representations since it's not in the record.
Okay.
And I would like to get, though, to Mr. Kramer's the issue he raised that I was trying to bring in Officer Raddick's colorful language to impeach. That is so far from the truth. This entire case, as far as the excessive force, is much like a barroom brawl case where you get 20 different versions of exactly what happened in that house that night. And credibility in this case was everything. Everything. And the portions of the audio tape that I sought to introduce were specifically with respect to Officers Raddick, who denied that he ever used specific words of, come on, buddy, you've got to use that warrant, you got it now, you've got to execute it, come on, let's do it, let's do it. That was on the tape a couple of minutes before this search warrant was executed. He directly, I asked him exactly verbatim the words that were on the audio tape, and he flat-footedly denied it. I sought to impeach him in that regard. And again, that's just minutes before what happens and transpires in the house. With respect to Officer Smith, Officer Smith testified in court, I was just happened to be the officer with the audio recording machine. That's all I did. The portions of these audio tape that I sought to introduce that were 14 minutes and I believe 32 minutes respectively before that are both Officers Raddick and Smith saying, come on, this is how you do it. Let's not call the, you know, screw the prosecutor. Let's wake the judge up in the middle of the night. This is how you do it, buddy. This is, come on, get it, get it, get it. I mean, I asked that specifically about Officer Smith, and he denied that he played anything more than just holding an audio tape recording. In this particular case, I think it is reversible error to not let me directly impeach on that type of credibility, critical evidence. Again, you know, from my perspective, these officers weren't, you know, all of a sudden, the minute you cross the threshold, all of a sudden, you know, they're telling the truth, but outside they're not. I don't think that, you know, as far as the, and I mean this with all due respect, the district court's decision that it was too remote and there were other ways to impeach, I don't think it was too remote. I think it was absolutely critical of the events of that night. And I believe that, you know, that was the best and only way in the officers' own voices that I could truly impeach these officers. I know I'm out of time, and I thank you all for your time and consideration.
Thank you, Ms. Ford. Thank you to all counsel. The case is taken under advisement.